Welcome.
Welcome.
Welcome to the Think Orange podcast.
A podcast with ideas and conversations to help you influence the next generation.
Here are your hosts, Dave Adamson and Ashley Bohens.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome to the Think Orange podcast. My name is Dave. I am your host, and I am joined in the Think Orange bunker by my good friend, Ashley.
Hey, friends. How are you?
How are you doing?
I'm good. It's good to have you back, Dave.
It's so great to be back. And I see you've redecorated the bunker. There's some more people in here. You've got some tchotchkes up on the shelf. You're doing a whole bunch of different things up in here. Posters up of NSYNC and Boys to Men and all sorts of things.
Yes.
This is what happens when I go away. You redecorate and turn it into a 16-year-old girl's bedroom.
Exactly. I was looking for inspiration, Dave. There was nothing to entertain me while you were gone.
I think that it's actually appropriate because this is episode 16, and I was thinking that's maybe what you were doing. Just, did you know the podcast is now old enough to drive?
Dave, I did not think about that. Thank beep, you beep. So much.
Yes. See, that's... That's where we're
sound
at.
Sound effects.
You've missed me, haven't you?
I have missed you.
What was the thing you miss most?
I miss the way that you always put me on the spot. It's just not the same without you, Dave.
Well, I'm so glad.
Can you tell us? Hold on.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about Israel?
It's a country in the Middle East.
No, about your time there.
I went to Israel. It was fantastic. Spent some time in the Holy Land just doing some touring. And we were working with some kids in Palestine, which was absolutely amazing through Global X. But man.
What's Global X?
Oh, that's a mission arm of North Point Church.
Thank you, sir.
So here's this cool thing. We went hiking in the desert in 123 degree heat. 51 degrees Celsius for those of you listening outside of the US where everybody uses the metric system. 51 degrees Celsius, 123. Can you imagine what that was like? It was hot.
It's getting hot in here.
Well, I don't know if it's getting hot in here, but it was definitely hot when we were in the desert in Israel. It was absolutely amazing. And I'm so glad to be back here in the bunker, even despite all the posters that are up. We'll change all that later on, okay?
Hey, I just got to tell the listeners, if they do not follow you on Instagram, they need to because your pictures from Israel are amazing.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So, guys, his Instagram handle is Aussie Dave.
I like how you say Aussie. Can you say that again?
Aussie.
See, when you say it, I don't feel a need to spell it. When I say it, I feel an A-U-S-S-I-E, but I say Aussie. We don't say Aussie.
Yeah. Well, the correct pronunciation is Aussie.
I think I would know.
Anyways, Aussie Dave on Instagram. Check out his photos. They're amazing.
Okay, so if this podcast is old enough to drive, we are currently making a massive detour.
We are.
I need to get us back on track, back on the GPS. I can see that it's saying.
Back streets, back. All right.
Brilliant. This is amazing. I hope this is just a phase you're going through and it's not going to be a long-term thing. Well, speaking of phases, that's what we're talking about today is all about phases and more specifically, the phases in a kid's life. You know, these are these times that all kids go through where they transition from one thing into the next. It's a time frame in their life. And we want to talk about today about not missing those opportunities to influence them towards their future. Now, Ashley, you've got years of experience in ministry. You must have seen kids go through certain phases, right?
Well, you know, I've had opportunity to work with several different phases. However, most of my experience is in the middle and high school phase, specifically the middle school phase, because it's the best, obviously.
Yeah.
But wow. Also because that phase is like the phase most people look back on and are like scarred from or like have like the worst memories of that phase.
Are we talking about adults who look back at their childhood? Or are we talking about parents looking back at their middle school kids?
I would say it's a combination yeah. of both. It's a hard phase to live through and lead through.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I've got two high schoolers and a middle schooler. Let me tell you, their phases are set to kill, not stun. You do get that. That's a Star Trek reference,
no.
Right? You didn't watch Star Trek?
Mm-mm.
Well, that's a phase that we're going to have to change in your life. And maybe one of the best ways to do that would be, in fact, for you to pick up a copy of the Phase Guides. They're our awesome sponsors for today's episode, the Phase Guides. I know this has been excitement around the office. Ash, can you tell us a little bit about that?
It has been. Yeah, we just released 18 books here at Orange, written by Kristen Ivey and Reggie Joyner. And it's an 18-part series yeah. of concise, interactive journal-style books. And they simplify what parents need to know about each phase of a kid's life. life.
Yeah.
And they give context around the 6 things every kid needs and the 4 conversations you need to have in that specific phase.
Well, as much as I want to ask you right now what those 6 things are and the 4 things are, I know we're going to unpack that a little bit in this episode, but I want to just jump in and say, as a dad, my wife and I, we've been so looking forward to these phase guides. I'm not going to lie to you. I snuck a couple out of the bunker the other day.
Listen, you need all the help you can get.
I totally do. I mean, 2 high school girls and 1 middle school girl. I mean, I need all the help I can get. And that's the thing I love about these phase guides. It's so practical. It's written specifically for parents. It's absolutely amazing opportunity for any parent who's listening right now. It goes through grades, right?
Yeah, it does. Well, it starts with a new baby and it goes through age 4, and then it starts from kindergarten through grade 12.
Yeah, that's so good. Well, these are specifically designed to make the most out of every phase in your child's life. And if you want to find out more, you can go to phaseguides.com. They are our fantastic sponsors of today's show, phaseguides.com. Hey, Ash, who have we got coming up on today's show? Anybody like relevant or significant in any way?
Well, hey, we are going to be hearing from the authors of these awesome phase guides. First, we're going to hear from Reggie Joyner.
He's the man.
The man.
The man.
Mm-hmm.
And who else?
Kristen Ivey.
What's Kristen's title? I always get stuck on this. I feel like that guy in A Knight's Tale who has to come out and say the title of Heath Ledger's character. Do you know the show?
No, I don't know what you're talking about, but I do know her title.
All right, I feel like the ring announcer ushering in Apollo Creed to the ring.
Listen, she has a big title. Are you ready for it?
She has a go.
Ashley's boss.
Ashley's boss. That's that's on her resume.
Her resume.
That's on her LinkedIn profile.
Along with executive director of messaging at Orange.
Wow.
And director of the Phase Project.
Wow. And the Sultan of Swing, the King of Sting. She is absolutely amazing.
I think a Sultan and a King are male.
Are they really? Oh, I don't know. Well, she's not male. She's female. She's Kristen Ivey. You're going to love her. Our interview with her was incredible, right?
It was. She had so much information to share that I'm sure the show notes are going to be very full on this episode.
Yes, you should get the show notes right now. Go and check them out. We'll give you details of how you can get those show notes at the end of the podcast. We're going to hear from Kristen a little bit later, but first we're going to hear from Reggie Joyner. So take it away, Reggie.
For years and years and years, I've started off most of my messages by saying I have 4 children. So I have 4 children. Now they're 30, 28, 26, and 24. And my youngest one got engaged a few months ago. No. That's 3 weddings in about a year. Yeah, and she's actually, Rebecca is actually, because she's the baby, she is the one who, How do I describe Rebecca? She has the survival skills. You know what I'm talking about? I mean, she grew up as the kid watching the rest of the ones ahead of her, so she understands kind of a street smart savviness of how to live life. She's the most organized of my 4, and I think we would all agree with that. She's got kind of the most, I think, probably the most business mind. She has the most money in the bank, I think. And at the end of the day, you know, I look at my kids and I think back through their life and their story, and there's this one moment that stands out about her when she was in the 6th grade that I think would probably give you a little insight into her personality. And did I mention it was the 6th grade? So we're getting ready to go out to eat, and I remember everybody's getting ready to walk out of the house, and all of a sudden Rebecca, she says, Dad, I don't want to go out to eat, so I'm not going. It wasn't like she wasn't going before. It was just that she's not going at that moment. She had planned on going, and then she just, for whatever reason, changed her mind and announced that she wasn't going. I'm still not clear to this day why she changed her mind, but she changed her mind. And so there was this dilemma, because the rest of the family is looking at me and they're kind of going, you know, let's go. Can we just go eat? Because we're all hungry. And so I did what, you know, most dads that are skilled like me would do. I reached into the toolbox that my parents gave me. And you all have one of those. You know, it's the toolbox that they use to try to work out things with you, and it never worked on you, but they hand it to you and you somehow think that what didn't work on you will work on your kids. And so I reached in and pulled out, you know, the logic, and I said to Rebecca, Rebecca, okay, let's just go. I mean, you need to eat. And she looked at me and she said, not really, not if I'm not hungry. And so then, you know, I decided I would try to be a little bit more psychological in my approach to her. I mean, I was a student pastor for 10 years, so I understand how to manipulate teenagers. And so I tried this, you know, I said, I don't know if you've ever done this before. I said, you know what, Rebecca, let's just go as a family together. We need to be together. And besides, I know you, and I know you want to go eat with us. Now, have you ever tried to reason with a sixth grader who has spent her entire life watching her siblings manipulate you as a father? I mean, she actually knew how to reach in and turn dials and push buttons in me that I did not even know existed. But to this day, I remember her response, because she looked at me without budging and she said, you don't know me. You don't know anything about me. Now, dads, there are just times in your fatherhood where you just have to man up and discipline your children so they understand how to live in obedience. Good luck on that one. I don't remember how we got in the car. I don't remember how we got to the restaurant, but I do remember once we got to the restaurant, we're sitting in the restaurant, and it was kind of like a Wednesday night business meeting that you show up for, and there's some people that have come to fire the pastor. You know something's going to happen. You just don't know when it's going to happen. It's tense. And so finally, after about 10 minutes of Pleasantville, I decided to break the silence, and I looked at Rebecca, and I said, Rebecca, why do you think I don't know you? She said, because you don't. I said, Rebecca, I know you. No, you don't. Yes, I do. No, you don't. Rebecca, I have watched you grow up. I was there when you were born. I live in the same house as you. I know you better than you think I know you. She says, oh, really? I said, yeah. She grabs a piece of paper and a pencil, and she starts writing something down, which starts making me really, really nervous. I'm saying, what are you doing? You'll see. Well, no. Seriously, what are you doing? I'm writing a pop quiz for you to see how well you really do know me. And I'm not going to tell you exactly how I did on the pop quiz. But I will tell you that, you know, I missed the first one. Favorite actor, I thought it was Leonardo DiCaprio, but it had changed, you know, like 6 months earlier. And I realized as a parent, there are three types of information that a dad especially needs to know and needs to have. You know, one is that there's that information that you're supposed to know that no one has told you, but you're just supposed to know it. And if you have a daughter, this will make sense. There's the information that you're supposed to know, but it keeps changing. And then there's this information that you're supposed to know, and it's somewhere tucked away in a child development book 10 years ago written by an expert. But the point is, when I think back in that moment of time in her life, there were just some things that I wish someone had leaned into me and said, don't miss it. And the reason that we want to lean into you tonight, and the reason we want to say to you that we don't want you to miss it, is not because we're afraid you'll miss out on something. We don't want your sixth graders and your third graders and your first graders and your 12th graders to miss out on something. And if you miss it, they may miss it. And one of the things that I hope is a result of being here the next few days that you'll just somehow get in your mind is that you need to make sure that you do whatever you can so that you don't miss it, because there's a generation in the wings behind you, and we need to make sure that they don't miss it. And if you don't miss it, the chances of them not missing it are greater. So I'm going to give you a few reasons why it's easy for us to miss. And they're going to be really profound reasons. So I want you to write them down, because it's going to be just, I mean, you're going to look at these reasons and go, I would have never, this is just amazing. Reason number one that it's easy to miss a phase is we don't see what we don't see. I mean, really. We don't see what we don't see. I mean, there's this thing going on in the life of a kid mentally and relationally and culturally and physically that sometimes we just aren't paying attention to. And it's almost like every kid is wearing an invisible sign and going through phases asking these invisible questions that they're carrying around with them. And they don't know how to ask them out loud. And if you're not careful, you're not aware of the questions. And so along the way, we fail to remember that we're the guides and we have a role, a very specific role at every phase to reinvent who we are, to rediscover who we are, and to lead them in a different way. Because you can't lead a three-year-old the same way you lead a third grader, the same way you lead a 13-year-old. And along the way, we have to understand how to redefine who we are. And so we have to pay attention to these invisible signs and questions that they're carrying, because our role is redefined at every phase. Now, to illustrate that to you for just a second, I've got some help and some friends that I'm going to bring out here for a few minutes. And see if they'll come out here and just help you see. Hey, Esme, come on out here. You guys come right on out for just a second. And they're carrying the signs that I think the typical kids who show up in your church would probably carry. And I think that somewhere along the way, you can understand and appreciate a little bit of what is going on in their worlds. And hey, Esme, how are you doing? Good to see you there. I'm going to come out here and help you for just a second. You want to hold my hand? There you go. Because Esme is about 2 years old, and she's wearing a sign, and her sign says, "Am I able?" Because most preschoolers are in this unique spot, in this unique place in their life, where they're trying to exist in their environment. They're beginning to understand their movements of their body. They're not quite as in control as they want to be, but they think they are, and they're trying to figure that out. They're going to say, "I can do that a lot." But along the way, you've got to understand when they walk into your environments, when you're parenting them at home, that they have this sign that they're wearing that says, "Am I able?" And this is Esme, and she's 2, and she's going on 20. And if you knew her mom and dad, you would know exactly what I'm talking about. They deserve her in a lot of ways. And so, and there's actually some similarities we could compare between what is happening actually, you know, in a 2-year-old and a middle schooler, but we won't go into all of that right now. There's just some similarities along the way. I mean, there's this stuff that's happening with mood swings, and there's, you know, some different things that are uncoordinated. They try to make sure they're getting to the bathroom at time. They, you know, that's not the middle school thing. That's the 2-year-old thing. But you know what? I'm going to give you a word for those of you who work with preschoolers. Raise your hand if you work with a preschooler out there. Because you see, you have a role in Esme's life. Your role in Esme's life, and I'm going to give it to you in one word, is the word embrace. Your role is to embrace her physical needs, to embrace her environment, to create a secure place where she can discover at this phase of her life who she is and what she needs to do. And along the way, if you do this right, you're going to give her a first impression of her Heavenly Father. And along the way, if you do this right, you're going to help her understand what it means to be loved unconditionally by someone who's in the family of God. This is an amazing opportunity you have for the Esmes of the world who walk into your class. Thank you so much, Esme, for being here. You know what I've got for you, Esme? I've got you all this candy right here, and I'm going to give this to you, and your mother's going to let you have as much of that as you want, and I'm going to take you right down here. Let's give Esme a hand for doing this. Thank you. And let me borrow your sign right here, okay? I'll take the sign. I'll put it right here so we'll remember a little bit. How's it going, Anthony? You doing okay over there? You hanging in? You're doing a great job. Good to see you, buddy. This is Anthony. Anthony's second grade. Anthony and second graders have kind of hit this crisis in their world. It's a comparison crisis. You know, in preschool, there wasn't a grading scale. Everybody's work was great. What everybody did was wonderful. And now all of a sudden, you know, he's entered into this new world, you know, of school, and he's recognized that there's a question that he's asking, do I have what it takes? Because all of a sudden, he's beginning to notice around him that there are other kids and other people that are doing things, and some people can run better than other people. Some people can draw better than other people. Some people can think differently than other people. And so in a world like Anthony's, he's asking the question, do I have what it takes to make the team? Do I have what it takes to make the cut? Do I have what it takes to make the grade? So as a leader, you have a role in Anthony's life. You know what your role in Anthony's life is? To engage his interest as a kid. So you can help him understand what he's good at. So you can help him understand, you know, what it means along the way to have the right kind of experiences so he can begin to experience, you know, what it looks like to be in the family of God and begin to learn a different way of seeing his world around him. And Anthony, thanks for coming and being here. I'm going to let you stand right here for just a second, but I'm going to take your sign. And if you'll stand right here for just a minute. Now, I'm going to rearrange you guys right here for just a second. I want the three of you to come here. And Kirsten, you go over there. And I think we just, because I think you guys aren't in high school, are you? I didn't think so. And these are friends of mine. These are mostly our staff kids and friends. And this is Julian, and this is Ty, and this is Eli. And they're here together because that's the way middle school guys travel. They agreed that they would come up here if they could come up here together and get some food and cash. So that was kind of the idea. Actually, speaking of food, I guarantee you in their world, in their life, I guarantee you their food bill has doubled in the last year, year and a half, 2 years. And when you think about this, you know, they have this question, who do I like? And that just means that this is kind of a period of time when all of a sudden friends are important. And you could rearrange that question and say kind of who likes me? Because this phase has a lot to do with acceptance. It has a lot to do with making sure that they're finding the right people to hang out with and be with. And so don't miss your role. As a leader, I'm going to give you, those of you working middle schoolers, another word. And it's the word affirm. Because you have this opportunity in their world to help them get through some difficult, confusing circumstances and situations in their life. And there are two critical things that will happen in their life if you show up in their world in the right way. One is you're going to help them own their own faith. Because along the way, with the right guide and the right person hanging out with them, you will help them as they're deconstructing and reconstructing what they believe, translate and interpret life in a way that will help them reorganize so they walk away the faith that's their own. The second thing you'll help them do that I think is important is you'll help them begin to value community. Because of this drive for acceptance that they have at this point, at this time, this is the greatest time in the world to ramp up what happens in their group and what happens in their community so that they can actually experience what it means to be connected to people who care about them. So thanks, guys, for coming. Thanks for being a part. Hang right here for just a second. I'm going to take your sign. And I think we got about $20 for each one of you in the back somewhere, okay? This is Kirsten. And Kirsten, 10th grade, and she has a sign that says, "Why should I believe?" I actually think I would trade her sign for this one. This is really probably what I would say. "Why should I believe you?" Because in her world, all of a sudden there is this collision that is happening between what she wants to do, what her friends are doing, what she has been taught, what she believes, her values. Everything is coming into this period of her life where she's trying to sort that out and figure that out. And as a leader, the reason it's important for you not to miss your role in her life is because this is the season, and there's about 150 weeks left before she's going to be walking away. And this is the season where you have an opportunity not to control her, because she doesn't want to be controlled. You have this opportunity to begin to lean into her world of life and learn how to let go and how to hold on at the right time so you can begin to mobilize her to be who she's supposed to be and to figure that out in her world. So the word for you is the word mobilize. And if you do this well, if you do this right, Kirsten will walk away with a mission, with a personal ministry, an idea of what she's called to do. And this is so important because along the way, the right word as a leader will kind of keep you focused on the issues that different kids at different phases are dealing with. I want you to give them all a hand. Let me take this from you, Kirsten. And thanks so much for helping me do this. And you guys can slip away. Thanks for going. You can go wherever you want to go, sit wherever you want to sit, hit people up for cash, whatever you feel like is going to do. The point is, we need sometimes a common language as leaders. And one of the things we've discovered through the years is if you hand each phase a word or a language, it helps every one of us understand how we're doing something very unique at each phase and why it's important. It's just easy to miss it because we don't see it. And I wish we would pretend sometimes like kids are walking around with these invisible signs and questions that they're asking. There's a second reason we miss it. The second reason we miss it, this is another profound statement, not simply because we don't see what we don't see, but the second issue is this: we don't remember what we don't remember. You see, sometimes, as a leader and as a parent, it's easy to forget a few things that are very, very core to what we need to understand about parenting and about leading. I think sometimes we get hyper-focused on a specific issue, or sometimes we get really down deep with a theological angle, or sometimes we just need to find an opportunity to stop and to lean into each other and to remind each other about one or two things that are very, very important about what we do so we can back up and see the big picture. Because sometimes when you're in the trenches, sometimes when you're in a specific phase, you forget something that maybe is a more compelling and bigger thing that is working in the background, and it's the thing that makes the difference in how you look and how you see kids, whether they're in your own home or whether they're in your church. As a matter of fact, I want to stop and remind you of one thing today that connects every one of us in this room, regardless of our denomination, regardless of the country we're from, regardless of our experience, regardless of our theological slant. There's one thing that kind of ties us all together in a way that's very, very important. And when I say what this one thing is, I know what you're going to say. You're going to say, come on, you don't have to tell me that. I know that. But sometimes, even though we know it, we just need to remember it. We need somebody to lean in and remind us, because this one thing, I believe, this one thing is the reason that some of us look at a kid and we see potential and others of us don't see that potential. This one thing is the reason that some of us can see the unique ideas and the unique bents and the unique things that a kid can do, and some of us just kind of pass those things by. I also think this one thing is the reason that most of you in this room do what you do. Because you believe this one thing. Again, when I tell you what this one thing is, you're going to go, oh, really? Don't make me feel bad about this one thing. Because this one thing is so important and it's so huge. And the reason I think we need to be reminded of it sometimes is because, again, it's just easy to forget. Are you ready for the one thing? Here's the one thing. One belief that can change how anybody sees their kid or teenager. And at the risk of overstating the obvious, here's the one thing. Ready? Every kid is made in the image of God. Every kid is made in the image of God. That may not be breaking news to you, but for just a second, I want you to stop and think about the potential and the impact of that one idea, that every kid is made in the image of God, that children have the stamp of God's image imprinted on their life. Every kid, think about it this way, has a divine capacity to reason, to improve, to lead. Every kid has a divine capacity to care, to relate, to trust, to believe, to imagine, and even to love. You know why? Because they're made in the image of a creative God, the creator of the universe. There's a part of that image that is in them. And sometimes as adults, we think the kids aren't old enough, or they're not smart enough, or they're not important enough. Sometimes we even think they're not Christian enough to learn anything or to grow in any kind of way. And what I want to lean into you for just a minute and say to remind you is that every kid at every phase in your ministry is created in the image of God. And something radical could change in your ministry if you would start teaching your volunteers and your parents every time a kid walks by to go, hey, look, that's somebody who's made in the image of God. And I need to look at the potential they have because they're made that way. You say that's theology 101, maybe. I think the disciples forgot it one day. It's really amazing that even the disciples that followed Jesus forgot this. And so Jesus, what did he do? He brought a child, and he put a child in front of them. And what he said, I sometimes I want to just stop and go, did he really just say that? Did he really just say what I thought he said? He brings a child, he puts a child in front of the disciples, and here's what he says. Whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me. Whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me. Can I paraphrase that for just a second? It's almost like Jesus said, I want you to treat kids the way you would treat me. As a matter of fact, I want you to understand something here. I am God. So just make sure you understand when you welcome kids, it's like you're welcoming God. Now, Jesus said that. You with me on this? Don't miss this. Jesus made kids a pretty big deal. No one should feel more welcomed in your church than a screaming baby, a bratty kid, a hormonal middle schooler, a defiant teenager. Somewhere along the way, you got to understand that it's your job to swing the doors wide open, and it doesn't matter if they don't sound like God or act like God or smell like God. You've got somehow in your imagination to look at these kids and go, you know what? When I welcome you, it's like I'm welcoming God. I don't understand it. Jesus said it, and it's just a principle that somehow we need to make sure we don't forget. And I know. Whenever we start talking about this, there's somebody saying, yeah, but don't forget they're sinners. Trust me. I hang around kids. I'm not going to have a problem forgetting they're sinners. I don't know that I've ever met a mother of a screaming 2-year-old or 3-year-old who forgot they were a sinner. I don't think the problem is we forget they're sinners. I think the problem is we forget they're created in the image of God. Yeah, sure, they're sinners. But the question is not, can you see their sin? Sometimes I think we're so programmed to see the sin in a kid, we've forgotten to see the potential of God that he's created in a kid, and we have to reorganize our brain and our imagination to see what a kid is made and designed to do. There's just incredible potential in this one thought. Let me illustrate this for just a second. This is Hensley. Hensley's 3 years of age. And as a matter of fact, let me just say it this way. Hensley knows every line in every script of Frozen. She knows every word of every song in Frozen. Combined, that's about 10,000 words that she knows. She even understands that this is Anna's coronation dress. And if you're going to sing First Time in Forever, you got to be wearing this dress. Right? And this is Anna's North Mountain dress. And this is Elsa's coronation dress. The coronation day dress that you have to be wearing when you start singing Let It Go. But then there has to be a quick change into the Snow Queen dress for the finale. Now somehow, don't miss this, somehow a 3-year-old brain can hold all this. That's a lot of potential. I just don't want you to miss it. Disney knows it. Why shouldn't we know it? This is Ezra. Ezra French is 9 years old. He was voted Sports Kid of the Year for 2014 by Sports Illustrated. He lives in LA, California. He was born without 4 fingers on his left hand. He had to have his left leg amputated to gain mobility. He basically plays all sports. He was captain of his basketball team, has a blue belt in karate, has a national track and field record in the 11 and under division. His motto is finish well. Why do you think Hensley can remember every line of Frozen? And why do you think Ezra has been able to accomplish everything that he's accomplished? Because they are made in the image of God. Let me introduce you to Thomas. Thomas is 12 years old, and he is an app developer. He just did a TED Talk on app development. He actually canvasses his teachers to figure out what kind of educational apps they do. He makes these apps. He sells the apps. He gives the money back to the education system. Why can he do this? Here's a hint. Because he's made in the image of God. All IT guys are made in the image of God. They think at a different level and plane. I'm not even sure they've experienced the fall. I mean, I'm telling you. Here is Malala Yousafzai. You've seen her picture, haven't you? This is the young lady at age 17, the youngest person ever nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize. She stood up for girls' education and was shot by the Taliban. In 2013, she spoke to the United Nations calling for worldwide access to education. How can a 17-year-old girl who's not even a Christian have that kind of courage? You know how? Let me tell you how. Because she's made in the image of God. This is Bill Nye the Science Guy. Now, I'm not going to say anything negative about Bill. Actually, Bill is one of the reasons I believe there's a God. Can you imagine the creativity and reasoning it takes to explain the world without a creator? Somewhere along the way, when I listen to Bill and I hear him talk, I feel like he's created a love for science in kids the same way J.K. Rowling has created a love for reading, you know, in kids. And I think we should learn from them how to create a love for the things of God I mean, I just think there's some amazing ways and techniques they've used. But here's the point I want you to understand. This is so, so important. You know why Bill Nye, the science guy, can reason the way he reasons? Because he's made in the image of God. And he doesn't even know it. You see, God has created and designed us in such a way we can do amazing things even if we don't understand who God is. Just don't miss this. None of these people do what they do because they believe what you believe. These people do what they do because they're made in the image of God. So here's a question. What would happen if you just started treating every kid, every boy, every girl, every second grader, every two-year-old, every fourth grader, every teenager like they're created in the image of God? What would happen if you teach every kid, lead every kid, influence every kid like they matter to God? This one idea could not only change the way you see them, but it could change the way they see God. This one idea can affect how they make decisions, how they view sex, how they use technology, how they relate to their parents, how they see the church, how they care about people, and how they trust God. And this is the answer. This is the answer. Trust me, I'm doing you a favor because I'm giving you the answer to a lot of questions that a lot of people in your church are going to ask you through the years. For example, when a deacon comes up to you and says to you, "Why should we make families outside the church a priority?" Here's why. Because every kid, even those whose parents don't attend your church, are made in the image of God. When a member asks you, why should you spend money, you know, to fight poverty and sex trafficking? Well, here's why. Because every kid, even those who don't live in your country, who are being treated like objects, are made in the image of God. When the budget committee asks you, why did you spend $100 on goldfish crackers? For two-year-olds that don't even tithe. Your answer: because they're made in the image of God. And when a homeschooler parent asks you, why are you partnering with public schools? I mean, because every kid, even those who aren't being homeschooled and those who don't go to Christian schools, are made in the image of God. And when someone says to you, why would you help kids grow emotionally and relationally and morally? It's simple, because every kid is made in the image of God. That brings me to one more thing before I wrap up and move to something that I just want you to see for just a second. It's just easy to miss, and I don't want you to miss it. I don't want you to not see what you need to see, and I don't want you to not remember what you need to remember. The third thing I just want to make sure you think about is sometimes we miss it because we don't anticipate what we don't anticipate. This is the reason we use a jar of marbles to give to every parent to create a gigantic countdown clock. So they'll think ahead collectively about how much time they have left. This is why in our new resources we have timelines everywhere so that children's pastors can look ahead and see what's going to happen in middle school, and so we can look across this timeline and we can understand the big picture and anticipate. Because if you're going to be effective at what you're doing, you've got to remember that you're the guide and you're leading a generation of kids to the next phase, and that's someplace they've never been before, but you've been down that road and you need to understand it. And one of the greatest gifts you can give each other as a staff is to lean into each other and to teach each other about the different phases so you can learn collectively what this looks like. That's why you have to think about more than just Sunday, and that's why you have to read more than just your Bible if you're going to be effective at reaching a generation. And as leaders, you have to be a part of a group of people that understand that you're supposed to help people see what's coming and understand that at every phase there are things that can happen that can sabotage a life. And you got to be aware of those things. You got to understand that when it comes to preschool world, and a lot of you deal with this in different ways in different parts of the country and other countries, their abandonment issues that rip away and steal away at their identity and who they are. And even in our own country, 4 out of every preschoolers live without a father. And when you look at the elementary age, there's all kind of traps we could talk about, but we could talk about the vulnerability of an elementary age child when it comes to sexual abuse and what happens, and the fact that 1 out of 5 or 2 out of every 10 girls during their childhood get sexually abused somehow, and that we need to put flags in place, not simply so that we can stop some of this from happening, but sometimes so that we can be the first responders in some of these scenarios. And I'm telling you something, when you get to the middle school world, it's like all of a sudden there's a perfect storm. There's all this stuff that starts happening, and it's you know, first everything, first dates, you know, first mobile device, you know, first joint, first drink. I mean, I don't even have enough of these to put up here. I just didn't count it. First look at porn. I mean, we could go down the list of what happens when a kid moves right from here into middle school, and all of a sudden, this is where, by the way, this is where kids start cutting. 1 in 10 kids will start cutting in middle school, and from there it accelerates. 1 in 10, by the time they finish in the 8th grade, will be sexually active. And you have this potential as a guide to create a strategy, to come along beside a generation and to help them understand how to be loved and what love really looks like. And it's really interesting. And all of a sudden they get into high school. You look at stats. And even when it comes to sexual activity, you look at from 2% in 7th grade to the end of 9th grade, it jumps to 30% sexual activity. And every year after that, it jumps about 10%. It's 41% by the end of 10th grade. It's 54% by the end of 11th grade. It's 64% by the end of 12th grade. All of a sudden, you realize that in the lives of a generation of kids, your role to anticipate what needs to be anticipated is just so important.
Well, that was some great stuff there from Mr. Reggie Joyner, all about phases and the fact that every kid is made in God's image. We want to unpack that a little bit more with the one and only Kristen Ivey. She's a fantastic friend of the pod, and we're so glad to have you here in the Think Orange bunker.
Thanks for having me. I didn't know I was in a bunker.
This is...
Bunker.
This is the bunker, and we are talking phases. Now, I know for a lot of people listening, this might have been the first time that they've ever heard of this idea of phases. So my first question to you would, could you unpack that a little bit more? What do you mean specifically by phases?
Well, a phase is something that we're all aware of. As soon as you become a parent, you don't have to parent very long to realize that your kid is changing, that they're growing up, that things are, you know, inconsistent, if you will. You get them on a schedule as a baby, maybe for a minute, and then they've grown up a little more and they're off of that. They start teething or they lose a nap or whatever it is, but they start changing on you. And so we just say every phase in a kid's life is a time frame when you can leverage distinctive opportunities to influence their future.
Yep.
And that just says this, that at each phase of a kid's life, every year that you have with them, those 52 weeks are not the same as the next 52 weeks. And so you can lean into them and see the opportunity in them, or they're just going to kind of pass you by.
Okay, so I want to stop you there and just jump in right in, because what you just said then, 52 weeks of the year, really defines something for me. Because when I hear Reggie talk about phases, my first thought is 6-month phase, maybe a year phase, maybe a 2-year phase. But you just called out 52 weeks, because as a dad, I mean, phases last a week. Some phases last, quite frankly, the phase that we had last night is different to the phase I'm in this morning.
Do you have middle schoolers by any chance?
Yes, and okay. High schoolers. And all girls.
The most fun.
Yeah. There are some things that are changing hourly, you know, by the minute. You know, your kids will look at you and say, I can't believe you think that I still like jelly beans. I've hated jelly beans for forever. And they mean like for a day, you know. So, I mean, there's some phases that they pass through really, really quickly. But we're talking about, you know, at the beginning of the school year, there's this phenomenon where parents will take a back to school picture.
Mm-hmm.
And then lately I've noticed more and more parents will start taking an end of school picture, and then they like to line them up, and you see the first day of school and the last day of school, because they're looking to see the change that's happened just in one school year.
Yeah.
And so that's just a parent's way of saying they can recognize, as adults, we can recognize in our children that they're changing much faster than we are.
Yeah.
And that somehow there's this weird phenomenon where time moves more quickly for a kid than it does for us. Or it seems like it.
Mm-hmm.
As adults, we're so busy with our lives and our jobs and all of our stuff that time just kind of is fluid and passing. And then for kids, there's a lot of growing up and changing happening in those weeks.
Yeah, Ashley, I know you've got some questions, but can I just keep going down this
Please.
Line? Because I'm super interested
yes.
in this.
Keep going, Dave.
So one of the things Reggie said was there's something in every phase that we don't want to miss. Now, that's easy to say when you're going through a phase when your teenager is super loving and you know, she wants to hug me and sit on the couch and have me tickle her back. But when those phases are mean and nasty and disrespectful and dishonoring and disobedient, what is it that I shouldn't want to miss in those times.
So are you saying there have been phases, you know, theoretically, that you might not have loved as much with a child?
Yeah, in theory. Just in case they're listening.
This isn't okay. Personal. Thing. This isn't personal.
No, it's not. Just in case my kids are listening. It is just a theory. They're fantastic kids. But what is the thing that I don't want to miss in those difficult phases?
I love that question because that's kind of where the whole idea started, is that as a parent, so often we lean into each other to encourage each other with the phrase, you know, it's just a phase. And what we usually mean by that is, you'll get through it. You know, they will stop throwing this unbelievable tantrum on the floor someday. They will stop, you know, kicking and screaming and ramming their head into the shelf in front of everybody in the mall while everybody's turning, looking at you. And, you know, I mean, those things will pass. And so we say it's just a phase to a parent to say, just get through this and it will get better on the other side.
Yeah.
But the truth is that every phase does have opportunity. Every phase has something in it. And it's not maybe something that you would be afraid to miss as a parent in terms of a memory or a loving moment.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something in each phase that you don't want your kid to miss.
Mm.
There's something critical that happens in every phase of a kid's life that they don't need to miss if you want them to have a firm foundation, if you want them to grow up and have a better future.
Mm.
And so there's a number of different things that we talk about in that. Sometimes it's the questions that they're asking that we sometimes fail to see as a parent, but that we want to lean in and answer in the right way so that they can resolve them in their life and have really just a sense of self, a sense of who God is and what that means in their world and how they will treat and respect other people.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to still keep going. I know you're jumping in. Ash, I'm so sorry.
I had something really great to say, Dave.
I know. We're going to get to it. There's so many things that I'm learning from just these answers. So my first part of the question would be, what is the practical advice you would give a parent who's listening right now and they're going through one of those difficult phases? Maybe their kid is throwing a tantrum in the supermarket every other day. Maybe there's a teenager who is willfully disobeying the long-established rules of the house. What's the practical piece of advice you would give to a parent who's facing that, that will help them process that idea of it's just a phase when they don't have somebody saying to them, it's just a phase?
Well, I think that's great. We kind of parsed it down into a different answer for every year.
Yep.
So it depends on which phase that you're in, but you pointed to two that are really, really common. You pointed right at the toddler years and those kind of middle adolescent years. And there's actually a lot of familiarity between the two. One just has, you know, they're grown up and their consequences can be a little bit bigger, but there's a lot of similarity to them. And so what it takes on our part as adults is really empathy.
Yeah.
A lot of the FACE project has been this exercise in empathy. As adults, it's hard for us to remember what we don't remember.
Yeah.
The preschool years are not actually in our brains anymore. We're not remembering what it was like to be in preschool. And so it takes a little intentionality to have empathy for a toddler that's doing things and behaving in ways that you think, I don't understand why a human being would do what you're doing right now.
Yeah.
And so part of that is understanding their questions in an empathetic way to say, if a preschooler really wants to know, you know, am I able? Say, take a two-year-old.
Yep.
Two-year-old wants to know, am I able to do these things? Am I able to, you know, dress myself, go to the potty by myself, make myself lunch? Maybe not, you know, but they think maybe I can, maybe I can't. What does this mean about me? And when you think through that lens as a parent, you're able to respond in a different way to help them see what they are able to do and remind yourself to have a little bit of patience in the waiting and in the mess because you know that that's core to what's happening in their world right now.
And as parents, we desperately want to, I think, and I heard you kind of allude to this, that the phase is not just about us as parents, it's about the kid and helping them to see that what they can pull out of that phase. But as parents, we often want to just get involved in inductive teaching. We just want to say, that's wrong, and here's the reason why, or here's the lesson you need to learn about that. But what I'm getting a vibe from, and I could be completely wrong, is that it's as much about deductive teaching for the kid, right?
Yes. One of the smartest counselors I talked to in our phase conversations said there is always a reason behind every behavior.
Mm.
And if you can look at your children and say, okay, what is the reason, what is the why behind this behavior? It just changes your thinking as an adult to go, okay, there's a motive here. There's a reason there. What are they screaming out for? What are they trying to achieve? What are they trying to answer for themselves? It just changes your approach. Maybe you still get to the same lesson and the same, you know, you can't do that. This is, you know, the rules of the house, but it changes maybe your method or your approach.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that the preschooler's asking, am I able? Do you have a question like that kind of is threaded throughout each age?
Yes, we do. We have, so actually 13 questions, not 18. There's some of the years where we kind of stretched those questions a little bit longer because it feels like it's really the fundamental question for that period of time. But in the first year of life, we would say a kid is asking, am I safe? You can go back to all kinds of psychology that would just say, you know, it's very, very important that a baby knows that they're in a safe place and that you respond consistently to meet that need of safety in the first 12 months of life. Then they move on to asking questions like, am I able and am I okay? Am I able because they want to see that they have the ability, the facility to do adult things? And then later progressing on to, am I okay? Once discipline enters the picture, that they need to really have this clear understanding that maybe they did something that was not appropriate, but they're still a good person.
Right.
After the preschool years, we move out of the am I questions and into questions that look more like, do I have? And so kindergartners, first graders are going, do I have your attention? And if you go into any kindergartner first grade room, you know that because they're moving closer and closer to you, repeating the question over and over again, trying to get your attention. In the second and third grade, they're asking questions like, do I have what it takes?
Right.
Do I have what it takes to make the team? Do I have what it takes to get noticed? Do I have what it takes to get in the club? And in fourth and fifth grade, it's no surprise that they're asking questions like, do I have friends? Friends just become so important in those years. Spend the night parties, best friends, friendship bracelets, all of these things kind of start to show up in the fourth and fifth grade years.
This sounds remarkably, like you're talking about kids, but I think parents are asking these same questions.
Yeah, I love that you asked that because the questions actually stay with us throughout life. They never really go away. But they are asking them in a different way at each phase. As a kid's growing up, there's a question that maybe becomes prominent in their life, something that just resonates because of where they are developmentally, how their brain is changing, what's happening in the social and relational world around them.
Yep.
And all those things kind of impact the things that will surface or rise to the top. And so in the middle school years, for example, as kids, as puberty kind of comes on, as they're changing a lot of times, their physical location, the questions have a very marked shift in those years. They move from concrete questions where the answers are yes or no, and you're always trying to help a child resolve the question in the affirmative with a yes, into questions that are a lot more gray and personal to the individual. And so starting with the sixth grade, we move into questions that are like, who do I like? Which is so often really the question, who likes me? Because a sixth grader is really drawn into someone who's going to accept them for who they are. A seventh grader starts to ask questions like, who am I? Really focusing in on that individuality, the uniqueness of who they are. A lot of times they're still defining who they are in light of how other people see them at that phase. But in the eighth grade, there's something that kind of tends to happen where that question shifts slightly from who am I into who do I want to be. Eighth graders have this unique ability that's kind of growing into something a little bit more missional, a little bit more intentional. So they're looking toward the high school years that are ahead and going, now, who do I think I might want to become? There's a little more ownership on that. In the ninth grade, because so many things shift, moving into a high school environment, culturally, so many influences kind of happen there, that where do I belong becomes a big, big, big issue. Educators, teachers will tell you who they find, the friends that they find in the first 2 weeks of high school have tremendous, tremendous impact on the next 4 years. And so parents of ninth graders, leaders of ninth graders, if there's one thing to know, is to zero in to where they're finding belonging in those first 2 years of high school.
So I have a daughter who's moving into high school, literally right now. How can I, as a parent, influence those 2 weeks? Like you just mentioned, 2 weeks are critical here. And I feel like as a parent, that's happening at school while I'm at work.
Right.
Maybe I don't have, like, I've got to sit back and cross my fingers and hope and wish for the best and pray for the right outcome. But I'm assuming there's an answer for me here.
And isn't there a lot of that in parenting?
Yes.
I mean, it is, you think, I want to control, I want to own it, I want to shape it, I want to make sure it goes right for my kid. And at the same time, just that sinking realization that you're not completely in control of your kid's life. There's tension in that. And in the ninth grade, I would say the main thing to do is just to sort of stand by and pay attention, to go, hey, you know, who do you sit with at lunch?
Yeah.
Who are in your classes this year? Who is the best friend that you have right now?
Yeah.
and continuing to ask those questions to be aware and maybe invite one of those friends over. Get to know those friends. Ask them to come go somewhere with you where you can drive the car and listen to the conversation in the back seat. Hear how the dynamic is shaping, because those friendships this year are so critical, and they may shift. A lot of times we'll hear teachers talking about how, you know, a kid gets into ninth grade and the friends that they had in middle school, who they thought they were in middle school, they're redefining themselves in a new way. And so it's not uncommon for that belonging to shift and change in the ninth grade. But that's why that question is so huge there.
Now, I'm assuming you're going to push on to the later years of high school. But before you do that, I just want to encourage everybody who's listening right now, every parent who's listening, skip back 30 seconds or a minute and just re-listen to that, because that was super practical to go somewhere with your kids' friends and just listen. I've never thought to do that. Because
Most parents don't want to drive, right? They're hoping someone else volunteers.
I want to control the conversation and ask all the questions. But what you just said then was super practical to me as a dad. Drive and just listen.
Yep.
Man.
In the ninth grade, you've got at least one more year left to get to drive your kid before they have a license.
Right?
And as excited as you are to not have to drive them everywhere, because it is so demanding on your time. It is a big job.
Yeah.
And oftentimes I know we're all ready to like move on, get off the job list.
Yeah.
And yet it is a really unique opportunity.
That's cool.
Absolutely. In the 10th grade, there's no surprise that with that driver's license comes new freedom, new levels of freedom. 10th graders tend to feel like, okay, now they've arrived, they've made it in high school, they're in, and they're fully ready to be adults with adult responsibilities. They're ready to try everything, experience everything, do everything. There's things happening in their brain that are actually wired and setting them up to crave adventure. And so the question that they're asking is, why can't I? Or why should I? You know, I mean, why should I believe you? Why should I believe what you say? Why should I not do that thing? I think I should. I mean, so all of that's kind of rising to the surface in the 10th grade. In the 11th grade, a junior starts asking the question, how can I matter? And not just how can I matter someday, which is the question that most parents want them to be asking, but they want to know, how can I matter right now, right this second?
What do you mean by matter?
Matter in terms of do something big,
right?
Do something that has meaning. So an 11th grader is really wanting to lead and wanting to serve and wanting to grow and wanting to do something. Now, sometimes those are all the positive characteristics of do something now.
Right.
There can be some negatives of do something now. You know, I'm ready to experience and do now all the things
that we've been telling them not to do.
Right. All the things. But they're ready for their life to be something.
Yeah.
And so juniors just tend to have this craving again to lean into that senior year, whether it's the beginning of the year or maybe it's in April or June or July. They begin somewhere in there to start to ask the question, what's next? I mean, where am I headed? Up until this point, you know, most kids have the next step mapped out for them. It's, you know, move on to the next grade, take the next class. Most of the things in their world are semi-ordered.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, they open up into this world of full-on potential and possibility, trying to figure out, what is the next step for me? Where am I headed? What does that look like? And one of the best things that we can do as leaders and parents in those years is to really narrow down the options, which sounds a little bit backwards, but at the same time, when you look at too many options, it can really shut us down as human beings. It's hard to choose when the options are endless.
Yeah.
Helping them self-select is really critical.
I love that.
It's why I don't go to the cheese factory. The menu is too big.
The cheesecake factory, yeah.
What did I say? The cheese factory. You knew what I meant.
Dave, you've been out of the country too long, friend.
That's true. It's like a 300-page book.
I want to go to the cheese factory.
The cheesecake factory.
Well, hey, I think it's really brilliant to give one question for parents and leaders to focus on for each year of a kid's life. And like, this kid is asking this question, so how can you best serve them? I would imagine a lot of our listeners are wondering this question is like, how did you come up with that? Where did all this research from the FAZE Project come from? You mentioned earlier that you talked to a counselor. Who were some of the people you got this information from?
You know, this idea is really not new. We've been going back through child development books, every book that we could find that's ever been written. The origin of this kind of thinking really starts with a guy named Erik Erikson. There's actually an Erikson Institute where you can learn all about his theories. He kind of lumped adolescence all into one bucket. So that would be one of the distinctives here, that we've kind of parsed the adolescent years apart. We've kind of reframed some things. And he was a high education kind of guy. So reworded a few of those things in light of new research, new studies. And then we also had groups with educators, teachers, counselors, parents who are parenting right now in the phases, leaders who volunteer with the phases. Our favorite conversations really are to get adults in a room who have spent considerable number of years just working with a particular age group. And there's this fun phenomenon when you get adults together and maybe they've been working with third and, you know, second, third graders for 30 years. All of a sudden that room just has this energy of adults who really resonate with that age group. They're excited about that age group. They're talking about why they fell in love with that age group kid. And as someone, sometimes in those rooms, I'm standing on the outside going, you know, I would have never seen all those characteristics, all those qualities about this age group if you weren't sitting here kind of sharing those stories and they're yes anding and they're going, okay, yeah, I see that too. And this is what my experience was. And when you kind of pull that together over time, there are things that begin to trend or surface from room to room to room. And so you begin to see common threads.
I love that. So I would imagine this is helpful for any parent listening. But from a ministry leader's perspective, how does thinking in phases change the way we do ministry or help us do ministry better?
I think responsible ministry has to begin with a concept of phases. Because if you only think about theology, if you only think about what's true in the Bible, you may miss what it takes to connect that truth to the very person that you're trying to reach. And there's something so important, and I can't put enough passion into this. And I know that everyone on our team feels this. Everybody, you know, who works in this feels that there's something that happens in those first 18 years of life. That if you can influence a person and the way that they see God, the way that they see themselves, the way that they understand that they have been made by a divine creator and that they're made in his image and there is a stamp of goodness in their life, and that they have been redeemed by a savior. When they can get that in their heart in the first 18 years of life, it changes things for the rest of their future. And so if you think that message matters, you should care about kids from birth to 18 years old. And you should care enough to learn who they are so you can speak their language so they'll hear the message that you want them to know.
Yeah, wow. I would say the expectations become way more relevant to that kid's phase. I love that.
Sign me up to serve because I just saw how passionate she got.
I know, right?
Again, now I'm going to call out. If you're listening to this and you're in ministry of any capacity, rewind 30 seconds and just listen to that impassioned plea. That was so ridiculously good. Of tying that into how it impacts ministry. I loved everything that you just said. Now, all of that stuff, it seems to me to be part of that timelines thing that Reggie mentioned. Can you extrapolate that a little bit more? Can you explain, unpack it for us?
This is going to be fun because I'm a visual kind of person.
Same.
And this is really a visual way of thinking and we're on a podcast, so I'll do my very, very best.
We'll put it in the show notes.
Okay, there
we'll
you go.
We'll make some sound effects too.
That's still audio.
Oh, yeah. But it's fun.
I'm going to explain visual and audio to you later, okay?
there's a way of thinking. When you look at what happens in a kid's life, and I still remember for me that part of this thinking began when I was teaching high school. I got in some kind of a group, I don't know how, where we were educators. We're supposed to be working on curriculum philosophy for something. And they brought us in a room and explained this thing that had happened in the math department where kids who were struggling in math, they had identified one of the reasons that they were struggling is because every year the teacher was changing their language in the way that they talk about how you solve a problem. And so kids who had learned and mastered a concept in math in the previous year, they went to a new teacher. The new teacher used a different language and the kid went, I've never heard that before in my life. I don't know how to do it. And so they were redefining how teachers could align their language and build something in a way that felt cohesive for a child. So you were taking them from one step to the very next step. Now, I think the same thing is true in almost anything you want a kid to know, that you have to value what has come before you if you want to do the best job that you can with the time you have right now. And so life mapping is kind of the thing that Reggie was referring to. It's this idea of looking not at everything you want a kid to know and then looking at the child in front of you and going, I have to make sure that you know it right now. In the moment that I decided to be intentional, you know, in this 30-second window, in this hour window. I'm going to make sure you get it all because I don't trust the person who came before me and I'm not sure about where you're headed after I get this opportunity. So I'm going to make sure
which
you get it now.
Which is parenting, right?
Right? Yeah.
You dump the whole seed bag rather than just planting one seed.
And it's the same is true in leadership and in ministry. Mm. So often we're so passionate about making sure, you know, that they make a decision to trust in Jesus or whatever it is that we're going, I want to make sure that you get this, that oftentimes we want to take a child as if they're this isolated person that only exists for the hour that we have them or for the year that we have them. Mm. And we forget that God was at work in their life long before we came along and that God's going to be with them long after we are no longer having the same level of influence in their life. And so life mapping says, okay, what could you do that would be just a little more strategic instead of giving them everything they need to know in a snapshot moment so that you're giving them what they really need most at every phase along the way. So let me just kind of back up and give an example of what that might look like. So you want kids to have in faith, a missional experience, probably at some point. You want them to understand what it looks like to really put their, you know, put feet to their faith and to get out and serve others. That's an important part, but you're probably not going to make sure that that happens when they're three.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, at least not like taking them overseas to a country where, I mean, there's just some things you're going to go, what doesn't have to happen when they're three, but you do want your three-year-old to understand the concept of service and sharing with others and that the way you treat others matters. And so you can back up and go, okay, if serving is important, what are you teaching them when they are 1 and 2 and 3 years old to really value sharing, serving other people in your ministry spaces? How can you start creating opportunities for your preschoolers to just help pass out the goldfish or to play an important role in the room? Maybe as they get older and they're in kindergarten, they can be the light turner, offer and honor. You can make up responsibilities.
Yeah.
You can go, you're the line leader and you're the second in line leader, you know, and you're the caboose. I mean, whatever it is, but you give them some sense of ownership. Maybe they're in charge of cutting something out or passing something out. And that responsibility grows. And when you begin to see how the effort that you're making connects to the efforts that other ministries are making, you see what you're doing in a bigger picture way. You begin to understand that the little things you do matter so much more than you thought they did.
Right.
Oh, here I am writing notes instead of listening to them. Because, I mean, it's such good stuff.
Well, for example, I jump in on that we do life maps for other critical issues as well, because there's some things that we especially get passionate about as leaders and as parents, things like technological responsibility.
Yep.
So we wanted to take some of those issues as well and say, technological responsibility is something you want them to have when they're 18, when they graduate.
Yeah.
But it doesn't start with a conversation one time when they get their cell phone. But it has to begin early on in their life, and it's conversations after conversations after conversations over time that you're going to re-engage and re-engage and re-engage to keep moving them toward that destination.
Yeah.
We've done the same thing with sexual integrity, which was a really intentional word for us to choose to say, we always want the destination to be something that no matter what has happened to you or what choices you've made, you can always get closer to that end towards sexual integrity, which we define as guarding my potential for future intimacy through appropriate boundaries and mutual respect. If that's going to be true for your kid, you can back up and begin having conversations even when they're in the preschool years.
Yeah.
That will help move them toward that goal and that end.
Which takes the pressure off the tip of the spear, as it were, of having the talk with teenager or something like that,
I would love to demythify the talk, because that's not healthy for them or you.
The days of the talk are long gone.
That's there should be many, many talks. And research has so significantly shown that the more conversations you're able to have with your kid, where they can come back and go, okay, I want to clarify a few things, or I don't really know what that meant. I mean, we would all be surprised if we knew all of the things that our kids thought they understood when we had the talk.
Yeah,
keep that conversation going.
So before I move on to my next question, is there a place that I can go to get that timeline that you're talking about for those things? Is that available in any capacity?
Yes, those are available for free right now. If you go to justaphase.com, you give us your email, we'll send you those PDFs for free as it is. We can put it in the show notes.
Well,
we could
Kevin,
make it as easy as
producer
possible.
Producer Kevin, take care of that. Put it in the show notes, all right? I'm not seeing him write anything down, but I'm going to assume that he does.
He's giving us the nod.
He's giving us the nod. Okay. He's just outside the bunker and we can see him through a little pinhole.
He's still nodding. He's still nodding, Dave.
So, Kristen, is there a phase that you think is particularly easy and a phase, conversely, that is particularly hard?
Oh, goodness. That's a great question.
Interesting.
No one's ever asked that question. You know, my first thought on that is probably the phases that we think are the easiest, maybe the ones that we need to pay attention to the most. Because it's so easy to lean back in those years and go, you know what? This is a sweet spot. Maybe I just don't, maybe I can kind of take a break. And I'm not saying that there's no breaks in parenting, but there's kind of no breaks in parenting. To lean in and just remind ourselves, okay, what is happening here? Not to get complacent, but to really value all of those years. And you know what? They're all equally hard. And there's so many different factors moving and shaking every time in a kid's life.
That easy period for me when I sat back, that was August 11, 2012.
What was going on, Dave?
Until August 14, 2012. Like I thought, I've got this made. It's so easy right here.
Really?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, one of the things that I have found super interesting, and maybe you want to talk about this, maybe this is for another podcast, but I know that Orange has produced a thing called the Parent Q app, which I lean in, like literally, I'm speaking as a consumer here. I'm not speaking as an Orange representative, but I look at that every week to find out what it is I need to be doing and what phase they're in. So that's another good place resource, I'm assuming, as well.
Right. And it's free.
Yeah.
So it's free and in your hand on this updated content every week. At the bottom, it has a phase cue that's brought to you by the phase team that just tells you a little bit of information about your kid now. So you don't have to go read a stack of resources or do a lot of digging. It's just one little piece that you can get every week. And then there's also specific cues, right, to have this conversation while you're driving down the road. I mean, that's the kind of stuff for me as a parent that I know I need, because I need somebody to just go, hey, make it easy, start a conversation and say something like this.
Yeah, that's the thing I probably love most. I think it's called discussion starter or something like that. And I know, like, I've asked my kids that question, and it's kind of remarkable how on point it is, because they're like, yeah, hang on, Leah, that's what I want to talk about, Dad.
That's good feedback.
But I kind of feel like I'm a lazy parent because I've got this app, but but I'm looking at it now as, no, this is not laziness. This is wisdom. This is like leaning into the advice of others. You know, it's the whole idea of it takes a village to raise a child. Well, now we have a digital village helping raise my child in a digital era.
That's great. And your kids don't ever have to know it. You can get all the credit.
My kid doesn't know it. None of them do. I keep it completely, like, it's like my little secret thing that I take off. Dad, what are you doing? Nothing, nothing.
I'm checking my email. Yes. Oh, hey.
Yeah.
Gives you cool points with your kids.
It does. You're 100% right. Parent Q app. Make sure you get that. Hey, I know that we've got this phase stuff coming out in book form at the moment. Tell us a little bit about that and what people can get out of it.
So the books really, they include all the things that we talked about today. So the conversations about critical issues, health, sex, technology, faith, the critical questions that we mentioned earlier, what it looks like to be in this kid's phase, how they're changing developmentally, mentally, physically, socially, morally, what's going on in their world. It really reframes that and also gives practical suggestions of how you can give your kid what they need most. That may be one of my favorite things because it's very listy and specific. Mm-hmm. Like, if you want to give your kid stories that will help shape their perspective, here's some books you could read together. Mm-hmm. So it's very, very practical. Here's some games you can play with your kid right now that they might think are fun. Very, very practical stuff. But the great thing about the guides that I get really excited about is it's really condensed hours and hours of research and conversations with leaders in this age group to kind of go, here's some suggestions, really, really practical for you as a parent.
Yep.
Here's what we think is true about kids at this age in general.
Yeah.
And then the thing that nobody can know like a parent is your kid.
Yeah.
So every parent, godparent, grandparent, foster parent, adoptive parent, single parent, whoever, if you've got a kid in your home and you're taking care of that kid, you know that kid better than anybody else. And so in the guides, there's room for you to personalize everything that's happening. So we have questions at the top for you to kind of write some notes and personalize it to your kid. So it becomes a roadmap for you for the next 52 weeks.
Yeah, that's so good.
It's like a journal book.
Yeah, it's a guide.
It's a guide.
It is. It's a guide. It's a journal.
We couldn't come up with another word. It's like a book or a journal.
But a guide.
Yeah.
I like it.
I love it. Now, it sounds like this is sort of the thing. A lot of times what we talk about here at the Think Orange podcast is stuff that is for ministry leaders, but this sounds pretty aimed at specifically at parents, right?
Right. The phase guides are for parents, but that is part of a ministry strategy, right? Yeah. It's you've got to help a parent really win.
So why would it be helpful for a ministry leader to maybe have their hands on these phase guides as well?
I think as a ministry leader, if you're leading in an age group and you want a few ideas so that you can look really good to parents when they ask you questions, because that's the thing. I mean, I remember teaching high school before I even had kids, and I would have high school parents ask me questions about what they could do with their high schoolers and right. thinking, you know, I don't know the answers yet, yeah. right? But so you could look at these guides for some ideas and suggestions, and then you give the answer like it's your own. Uh-huh. You don't have to cite us. You just say, hey, I actually had this brilliant thought the other day, and you can share yeah, that.
Right.
Brilliant.
And I totally agree with that, because I can't count how many times parents would say to me, what happened to my middle schooler? They never used to act like this. Yeah. You know, I don't know how to talk to them. They don't want to talk to me. So it would have been such a helpful resource for me to have in my hands.
Yeah. Mm.
To have that language.
Yeah. And then if they want more, you can share that resource with them. Give them the guide. Mm-hmm. Say, you know, here's something that I've found for you and you could use this and this could yeah. help you mm-hmm. in your own home. Definitely.
I see that as so valuable, because I know as a dad, I'll often go to my middle school small group leader and say, hey, what's the deal with how she's dressing at the moment? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But to have them be able to say, hey, you know what? Here's either an answer or here's a book,
mm-hmm.
or can I suggest a book to you to go? That's, I see that as being infinitely helpful for ministry leaders.
So helpful.
Yeah. So I guess the next obvious question is, as a dad, how do I pick up copies of these new phase books that have come out?
You can find out more about those at phaseguides.com.
Yep.
And that will link you over to our store where you can buy them directly from us or from Amazon or...
Yeah, that's great. Now, we'll put all of that in the show notes. Make sure that producer Kevin has that. PK, I'm just going to call him from now on. Make sure that PK's got all that sorted out.
That means
out.
Something
that means
else.
Pastor's kid, right?
Yeah.
Oh,
does
well,
that make you a pastor's kid?
Not anymore. It means producer Kevin. But what I'm hearing from you, and I don't know if we've said this, and I might have missed it because I'm thinking about my 8th grader, 9th grader, and 11th grader. Are they set out specifically in years for parents?
They are. I'm going to translate years to grades.
Okay,
for some
great.
Australian.
But that's great.
Translation.
Years or grades, either way that you yep. would call it. Yes. So in the preschool years, they're set up for the first years of life to track with the age of the child. And then once kindergarten start and those schooling years begin to hit, we felt like the social aspects, the cultural aspects that are influencing their world were significant enough that we wanted them to be grouped by years or grades. And so it shifts into kindergarten, first grade, second grade,
right.
and so on.
So I can pick up one from my 8th grader and it just covers that 52-week period.
8th grade.
I absolutely love that. I cannot wait to get my hands on this because I know it's going to make me a better, mm-hmm. more practical dad.
Yeah, you need some help.
Yeah, I do. I know. I've got 3 girls. I say it every week. I need help. I need help. So we'll have all that information in the show notes. Kristen, thank you so much for giving us, man, just so much insight.
Thank you. It's been fun to be here.
Yeah, I hope you can
in the bunker.
Yeah, the bunker is
well done.
We got wiser in the bunker today
because
she was here.
She dropped a lot of bombs.
She sure did. That's why we have a bunker.
Mm-hmm. Well played, friend.
Well, Ash, this has to be one of my absolute favorite podcast episodes. So incredibly practical, not just for people in ministry, but especially for parents, don't you think?
I agree. I think the Phase Project changes the way we can do ministry because
yeah.
we can understand kids exactly where they are. And if we don't know where they are, how do we ever meet them?
Yeah, totally. Like Reggie said something so simple, yet probably so profound. And you, sometimes you need somebody to say something mm-hmm. before it actually sinks in. The way that he said every kid is made in the image of God, we all get that.
Mm-hmm.
But I love that idea of every phase is made in the image of God. Because as a dad, sometimes I just want my kids to hurry up and get done with this
right.
phase because it's annoying me.
Well, that's what I love about the phrase so much. When we say it's just a phase, don't miss it. Usually
yeah.
that's used like in a negative way, but the Phase Project kind of flips it around to the positive. Like,
yeah.
yes, it's a phase. Don't miss it.
Yeah, that was awesome. I mean, and Kristen, I mean, that was probably one of my favorite interviews I might have even ever done.
Well, that's because she just kept giving more and more information that
yeah.
was like gold.
And for me, it was super practical. Like I literally was writing stuff down as she was talking and wanting to text them all to my wife so that we were both on the same page with the phase. You know what I mean?
All you have to do is buy the 18 phase guides and you have it all.
Well, yes, I will buy them. I did tell you that I walked out with a couple the other day, but it was incredible. Absolutely love this episode. I want to encourage everybody who's listening. If you're a parent or you know a parent, do do not keep this podcast to yourself. This is, if you are only going to share one podcast this year, this is the podcast to share, this episode specifically, because it is so helpful. I'm speaking as a dad here. I'm going to share this with all my dad friends. Are you going to share it with anybody? You're going to share it.
Yeah, I am. And I'm not a parent myself, but I want to speak from the ministry leader side. Yeah. I think that, like I said, the phases project changes everything.
Yeah, totally.
And changes the way we can do ministry. And I know that these guides were written to parents, but I think ministry leaders are going to benefit from it so much, because there are so many times parents would come to me either as a public school teacher, yep, or a ministry leader, and they would ask me questions about, like, I don't know how to connect with my kid anymore, or what is happening with my kid? They never used to do this. And sometimes, like, especially me not being a parent, I'm like, nah, I don't know. You know, like, your kid's a weirdo. I don't know what to tell you. But it would have been so helpful to have helpful language to help the parent win in the life of that kid. And back to what Reggie said, is if the parent doesn't know what to look for in that phase, and you as a ministry leader are guiding them there, then they're going to miss it.
Yeah, totally agree. Because I was that dad who came up to you as a teacher and said, hey, I don't connect with my kid. They're a weirdo. Can you help me out? So please, you know, we always say at the end of the podcast, please share the podcast. This one specifically, we've spent a little bit of time on this because it's so important. Please share this episode of the Think Orange podcast. You'll absolutely love it. If you want to find out anything else about what we said today, you can always check out the show notes. The show notes can be found at thinkorangepodcast.com. That's thinkorangepodcast.com. And as always, we want you to subscribe. We want you to review. Reviewing is so important, right?
It is. Review the songs, review the topic.
I think you say that every week.
Review, I know. And I've seen them show up. I'm just saying.
Well, I think this episode was a 5-star episode. So make sure you go ahead and do that. And as always, the thing that we always say before we walk out of the bunker is, whenever you think next generation, think orange.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Think Orange podcast.
Join us next time for more ideas and conversations to help you influence the next generation.
For more episodes and show notes, visit thinkorangepodcast.com.